Violet, we'll start with our first question. We have approximately 20 minutes. Violet, how do you feel about peace talks?
Ooh, honey.
Both. And there's also related to that, what solidarity action can we as church take in support of the struggle of Palestinians? Any questions? Here.
Yeah, well, as for the peace talks, it's the same with the gift of prophecy, you know. They are good words, but I'm looking for the deeds. It's not easy to have peace talks and to see Arafat and Rabin shaking hands with each other. But that's not the kind of freedom and peace I'm dreaming of. And it's not the question of Palestinians getting to love or to be friends with Israeli or the other way around. I don't want to get to or to fall in love with the Israelis and say, okay, we're not enemies anymore, we love each other. No, that's not the kind of peace I'm looking for. It's the kind of peace I'm looking for is that to name my enemy by name, to say, stop, you're abusing my human rights, you're denying me my dignity, you're holding me under occupation, and I want justice from you. And only in this way can we, maybe in many years, get to be friends or acquainted to each other. So it's not the kind of differences and similarities, it's the same question with enemies and friends. So I do hope that the peace talks which were held here could be reflected in the life of the individuals so that they won't be remaining as a personal relation between the politicians of the United States and those of Palestine and Israel. I want that the people living in the refugee camp with an unemployment rate of 80% to know that even when they don't have any piece of bread to eat, it's not enough to tell them, not from bread alone does the man live. Yeah, it's not from bread alone, but if you don't have even that bread, how could you survive to say such a sentence? So if we want the peace talks to continue, we want to see that we as Palestinians don't have to go back home once a year anymore to extend our right of returning. That means as a Palestinian, I am always allowed to leave Palestine, but I am only allowed to re-enter Palestine if I have a re-entry visa from the Israeli occupation, which is valid for 1 year, one entry, and then you lose your right to ever go back. If this is still the reality of the life in Palestine, then it's not the peace talks which are being held, those of which I dream. So it's on time to say, from their fruit you will recognize them. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking hardly for the fruits of these peace talks. And I must say, I couldn't find till now any of the fruits which can show that these peace talks will be reflected in the life of the Palestinians living under occupation within the occupied territory. This is for the first question. The second question, solidarity. Well, it's a very actually interesting question. It is always the question which arises when I speak in Western societies. in Western communities. Solidarity, and I think that we have to understand nobody can change our reality as Palestinians living under occupation but we ourselves. Mm-hmm. We are the only one to change, and this is why when I came here knowing that this might have consequences for me, I wanted to do just as this impudent widow, to stand up for my rights, not waiting for any heroes or any rescue to come and pick me up out of these humiliations, out of this occupation. It is my work that is asked. So we are the only one to change our reality. But what I think is the place or the point you can help us, or we can go together. Just to give you an example, many of the churches within the United States organize Holy Land tours almost each year. They go to the Holy Land, visit the churches, the museums, the streets, the trees, everything which survived the history of this land. But nobody cares about us, people living stones of that Holy Land. So my message to you is that it is on the time that the churches of the West recognize that we are the living stones of the Holy Land. We are important for that land, and not only the dead stones which really, you know, were left from the history. I usually say I'm a product of the Western missionaries. My name is Ar-Rahib, my last name, which means the monk, the Greek Orthodox monk, which is an implication that my family used to be Greek Orthodox before the German missionaries in the 1950s, in the 1850s, came to us and re-Christianized the Orthodox Christians into Lutherans. And to be a Lutheran doesn't have to do much with the Middle East, with the Middle East, or with the Holy Land. But I'm a Lutheran. And even the Lutheran churches don't care about us Lutherans living in that area of the world. And they are speaking about the spirituality of praying in the Holy Land. But I'm really looking for these reflected in the lives of those people. And the second, maybe, I was very honored to be chosen to take part in this gathering and on this panel, even though I find it a very hard task to carry as the only person representing the Middle East. And as a friend of mine told me when I came here, you know, Violet, I think it's very difficult for you to be in this gathering among so many people representing the whole Middle East as a woman, a Christian, which is a minority, a Lutheran. We are only 2,000 in the whole Middle East area, people, Lutherans. And at the same time, as a person who's only 24 years old. So I find it hard, but this is the start, that we are giving you the message. We do exist. We are sisters and brothers. We do care about you. So if you come to our land, you are welcome to have a dialogue with us, not trying to re-Christianize us, but please to respect our differences, our context, so that we can know which parts of our future can we go together and where are the parts where we, as different communities, cultures, and contexts, have to go alone on our own. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Just a quick word on the issue about diaspora. I've been asked to complete the diaspora as a biblical image. To my knowledge, diaspora, the word, the concept, is not biblical. It does not come out of the Tanakh. That is, it does not come out of the Torah, the books of the prophets, the wisdom writings that we call Hebrew Bible or the Old Testament. diaspora is a term out of Judaism at a later period. Okay, it's a term out of Judaism from a later period. And there are African-American women, womanist theologians and ethicists who are in dialogue with Jewish feminist theologians about the use of the term diaspora, about Holocaust, about Middle Passage as terms that connote the nature of specific kinds of oppression and specific removal from lands. So I was using it in the African-American context, African-American womanist context that is a liberationist context that says that we own the fact and acknowledge the fact that we did not leave Africa in our ancestry as a willing people, and that that connotates not only that history, but then our contemporary acknowledgement of where our roots are from, even though that is, according to Western sciences, a very hard thing to demonstrate according to their rules of cultural transmission and those sorts of things. Okay. What the big question here that I have in front of me is, we cannot change what has been done. Is it possible for people to let go of our heritages and re-image God for everyone and cover all the differences?
I believe that Anna Maria was trying to help us open our eyes to see that to cover the water rather than a God that covers us all is that when we bring our each particular cultural struggle heritage to the understanding of what God is, we vastly increase the mystery and understanding, which is so much more powerful to me than to have a God that covers the whole waterfront. It enables a mystery to go on and for me never to get bored. I have to tell you that some of the traditional images, frankly, are boring because they haven't moved over to help us think about anything else. Okay? And that's not to say that those images are not important, but it is to say that if God is ever unfolding and is our future, then that means that God somehow leaves something new out there for us to find, so the same old images as the only images don't work. The same thing about letting go of our heritages. We have a great tendency in this country to want to let go and move on to the next thing, honey. Okay, we love to be trendy in this country. Okay, and that includes, for a while, you know, everybody claimed their ethnicity, so Italian Americans were in and Irish Americans were in. But you know, black folks are never in this country. Never in. I'll tell you why I believe that. I spent 12 years being a campus minister at a major urban public university, and every new year, international students, no matter where they came from, we're always socialized to not be like black folks. Be like everybody else, but don't be like black folks. That means the trends pass some of us by, and we never are trendy. We never become part of the dream, not from our own desire not to be or want to be. So to let go of heritage is just playing into the trendiness. Heritages are always positive and negatives, as Anna Maria tried to share with us. I mean, not everything good about the black church experience, honey, is wonderful. I mean, you know, I have Baptist sisters who cannot get in a pulpit and preach. That does not make that tradition wonderful. But if I let go of the heritage, I let go of their struggle. Okay? If you let go of the heritage of white racism without understanding it, you're going to fall into it again and again and again. Because without facing, so what spirituality does, and a spirituality of difference, is enables us to face into that which we have been told to fear and live through it, come out on the other side going, whew, God's promises are good.
Thanks, Joan. I just have a few minutes. I want to say a couple of things about differences, and I think it's extremely important. Anytime and every time that we are told, why can't we go beyond differences? In reality, what we are being told is, why can't all of you who are marginalized minority groups cannot be like the normative group? That is what happens. That's what is called the essentialist meaning of differences. And that is the mindset out of which we always operate. So that's something that we have to keep in mind. Maria Lugones talks about what is called boomerang perception. We always are saying when your child, white child, comes home and says, you know, I met this little Hispanic, Latino, speak child, and we always say, don't worry, darling, he or she is just like you. That's a boomerang perception. We never say, don't worry, darling, you're just like he or she is. We always see others in view of ourselves. And that what it does is obliterate differences. I think that we need to, you know, Joan has done a lot of work on this, Audre Lorde, Maria Lugones, Iris Marion Young. There's a vast literature right there, out there right now, that I think needs to be studied carefully, and that we need to dialogue on this very much. Now, appreciation and affirmation of differences is not and does not lead to dualistic thinking. Dualistic thinking has to do with separating into categories that then you oppose to each other. And that's not what affirmation of differences is about. In reality, what we are asking in many ways is, let us all, out of our specificity, out of our differences, contribute to create the norm. And not let us all who are different accept what is normative and erase what is specific to us. Those are two very different things. Coming from a group in this society whose language has been voted by millions not to be official in this country, it is very clear to us that we have to fight with tooth and nail to maintain the specificity of who we are out of a tradition and a culture which is immensely rich and which we think has a lot to contribute. Well, one quick last thing. I'm asked here, at the grassroots, how do you find another one to go with you in your strategies? It's really difficult to. I always get afraid of saying anything about strategies because you have to then work them specifically within your content. But one thing we shouldn't forget, it's back in the 70s when we're doing our CR groups as women. We all learned that if we are willing to talk to people and listen to people, listen each other into speech, we will realize, people will come to realize their own oppression. So many times we don't find anyone to go with us because we don't take the time to allow people to speak so they can understand how they are also being oppressed in that situation. So I think that that's some of the dynamics that we need to begin to work with.
Ada and Violet, I think there are a couple of questions here that we can just give some resources for. One person asked, have there been times in your life when your anger came close to destroying you? What prevented it? I'd like to invite you to go to your library, your public library, your local bookstore, your church library. Get the church to order it if they don't have it. Making the Connections, the Writings and Essays of Beverly Harrison, as edited by Carol Robb and published by Beacon Press. Beverly Harrison has a wonderful article in there called The Power of Anger in the Work of Love. And it should be, after you read the Jesus in the Temple passage, then read Beverly Harrison's article. Okay, and the issue about what happens to faithful women and women of faith if their spiritual journeys take them out of the Christian church, especially if they come from small rural communities or there are women in this gathering who are experiencing that journey. I suggest that you hang up a notice sign down on the bulletin board that says, folks such as yourselves who want to look at that question, get together. And I think that those of us who are pastors of churches or have been pastors of churches need to address that issue, because there are some women pastors, some feminist and womanist pastors, who do believe that, like bad marriages, you don't leave a woman in there until they're beaten to death. But that part of the healing, hey, how many of you have ever done pastoral counseling to a woman who's just barely made it out of her home for somebody who has come from a church where the pastor told her that it's her duty in her life to stay there. And the next thing you do is you met her at the hospital. Right? Well, you know, the church does beat up on some women like that. And men, too. And gays and lesbians. And black folks or Hispanic folks or Palestinian folks in predominantly white congregations. And then there are also great congregations, too. Sometimes we do, in light of our ordination or constitutional questions for ordination, have to help people out of situations in which they are being battered. And then we need to help them find new situations. So I think there might be a group that needs to hang up a sign, both of women, lay women in that, those kinds of situations who want to talk to others, and women pastors who've had the experience of having to deal with helping women out of a situation in which patriarchal spirituality and patriarchal institutionalization of the church has beat them up badly, and how we help heal those persons.
I'm afraid we've run out of time. Violet, Ada Maria, Joan, thank you for your insight.
Thank you.